Al-A'raf, verses number 13 and 14, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala depicts a conversation between himself and shaytan. He says, أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. قال فاهبط منها فما يكون لك أن تتكبر فيها فاخرج إنك من الصاغرين. قال انظرني إلى يوم يبعثون. قال إنك من المنظرين. He said, get out of here, you are expelled. And indeed, upon you is my curse until the day of judgment. He said, my Lord, then respite me until the day they are resurrected. Allah said, so indeed you are among those granted respite until the day of time well known. In this exchange, Shaytan vows not to seek revenge against humanity, but also states his intention. ثم لا يأتينهم من بين أيديهم ومن خلفهم وعن أيمانهم وعن شمائلهم ولا تجد أكثرهم شاكرين. Then I will come at them before them and from behind them and on their right and on their left. Surah Al-A'raf, verse number 17. You see, this verse highlights Shaytan's comprehensive strategy in attempting to lead humans astray by exploiting all angels, be it through desires or fears. Okay, for now, let's go for a short break and we will be back very soon.
The Lantern.
Under the light of lantern, we'll look at this story, which indicates a moral aspect of our life.
Welcome back to your audience. You are listening to Lantern and we are talking about Satan. Well, now let's talk about the methods used by Shaytan alayhi nala. The first method of the cursed shaitan is whispering or waswasa. You know, one method employed by shaitan is whispering doubts into people's hearts. This concept appears abundantly throughout Islamic texts. In Surah An-Nas, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, وَمِن شَرِ الْوَسْوَاسِ الْخَنَّاسِ, verse number 4, from the evil of the whisperer who withdraws. According to Shia tradition, as narrated in various hadith collections such as Al-Kafi by Sheikh Al-Kulayni, these whispers can incite individuals towards sin or create doubts about Allah's mercy or justice. The second method is exploiting human weaknesses. You know, Satan's method to mislead humanity often involve exploiting inherent human weakness such as greed, jealousy, and desire. In Islamic theology, it is understood that humans are born with a blend of strength and weaknesses. Okay, well, dear listeners, that was the time we have for this episode. I really hope that you have enjoyed listening to it. And until another one, I bid you farewell and may Allah protect you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم ولقد خلقناكم ثم صورناكم ثم قلنا للملائكة اسجدوا لآدم فسجدوا إلا إبليس لم يكن من الساجدين.
And we have certainly created you, O mankind, and given you human form. Then we said to the angels, prostrate to Adam. So they prostrated, except for Iblis. He was not of those who prostrated.
قال ما منعك ألا تسجد إذ أمرتك قال أنا خير منه خلقتني من نار وخلقته من طين.
Allah said, what prevented you from prostrating when I commanded you? Satan said, I am better than him. You created me from fire and created him from clay.
قال فاهبط منها فما يكون لك أن تتكبر فيها فاخرج إنك من الصاغرين.
Allah said, descend from paradise, for it is not for you to be arrogant therein. So get out, indeed you are of the debased.
Dear brother and sister, thank you very much for your company. This is the end of this episode of Lantern. Until a new story, fi aman Allah.
Ala bi dhikri Allahi tatma'innu al-qulub.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Eastern Tales. Roundtable Discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, how to invite for suhoor and iftar. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, welcome to A to Z with me, Sister Zainab on IRIB English Radio. And obviously I talk every so often about how we... what sort of meals we should prepare for suhoor and iftar, but there's a slightly different aspect here too. It's how do we invite people for suhoor and iftar, or with what intention maybe are we inviting people for suhoor and iftar? And this is really important because basically what is so background is that obviously the so this in, and I'll just sort of read this out in maybe nice language. So it says that the sincere acceptance of a believer's invitation and sincerely sharing the table with a fellow Muslim can give access to such huge rewards and profits which cannot be achieved by worshipping of several years or deeds. So obviously it's the sincerity of accepting the invite, sincerity of obviously just sort of sitting down with a fellow Muslim. So that in itself is of great benefit. So obviously if you receive an invite for an iftar or even for a suhoor, I suppose, but for iftar it's usually, then inshallah you are able to accept it. And obviously then even just on the sitting down, the being with the other believers for iftar, that also... has, in a sense, great rewards. Now, obviously, there's conditions to this, because otherwise I wouldn't have titled this, How Do We Invite for Suhoor and Iftar? So what does this mean? So first of all, the most important, the deed must be sincere. And this is needs more explanation, because if we understand what sincerity means, then we know basically all aspects to this. Thank you. Welcome back. This is A to Z and IB English Radio. And so I'm talking about how we invite people for suhoor and iftar and how we can have the sincere intentions, I suppose, in a sense, both when we're inviting and also when we're accepting invitation. So obviously, it's all about the sincere deed. So, and this is where we really need to sort of ask ourselves, okay, are we meeting these conditions? So we're told that the aim and intention should be for Allah's pleasure and to follow the divine etiquette and manners in this month. Obviously, divine etiquette and manners in this month is that we should be inviting people for iftar. We should be sharing iftar if we have those conditions, if we're able to, if there are people inviting us and if we have the ability to invite people. That is a highly recommended thing to do during the month of Ramadan. And obviously, why are we inviting them? Well, we're inviting them because Allah wants us to, basically. So in a sense, we want to try and purify the intention. Then obviously, I'll explain this. So the motives, when we're inviting people, our motives should not be because, oh, we're thinking to ourselves, oh, I need to invite that person because if I invite that person, maybe they'll think well of me and maybe they'll invite me to do a speech or maybe they'll find me a good job or maybe I just want to be seen as doing this. So like hypocrisy or egotism, we want to invite people to maybe show off our new apartment or our new furniture or publicity. Also the wrong motive, maybe we want people to talk about us and how good we are or of what sort of place we live in, how amazing our food was. And we shouldn't even be inviting people because we want reward in the hereafter. So this is where, or to follow local customs because everyone invites people for iftar. And this is the most difficult, of course. This sincere deed, that it's just for Allah. We do it, not because so-and-so invited me, I should invite them. No, we invite because we know Allah wants us to invite. Allah wants us to do it, just that. So inshallah, we can all purify intentions every single day, every single time we are inviting people or being invited. And pray you gain just a few reminders from today and look forward to welcoming you to another episode of A to Z here on IB English Radio with me, Sister Zainab, and farewell for now. Thank you very much for listening to this episode of A to Z. And for more information, please also visit our website at www.iranradio.ir.
In the limelight. Exploiting Beirut's urgent need for economic reconstruction and recovery, the United States has tied financial relief to normalization of Lebanon's ties with Israel, using it as a precondition. We take a look at some of the World Press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Iran's Press TV has covered the story and tells us more. Despite Israel's repeated aggressions and escalating violations, normalization remains responsible, while the people's resistance and resolve persist. On 23rd of March, the Israeli regime reenacted the Majd al-Shams scenario, claiming that an influx of rocket fire from Lebanon was launched by Hezbollah, a claim that the Lebanese resistance movement has flatly rejected. That day, the Tel Aviv regime again unleashed its wrath, martyring several people in Tulin and Tyre in southern Lebanon in attacks described unprecedented since the November 2024 ceasefire between the two sides. Regional tensions reached a boiling point with the U.S. reaffirming its resolve to act against resistance forces across the region. Aggression against Yemen has escalated and the genocidal war in Gaza has resumed. Yemen has severed the United States and Zionist regime's sea supply routes. Lebanon remains key to Tel Aviv's hostility due to its geographic proximity. The resistance's capability to strike deep inside the occupied territories has grown, and the threat of the elite Radwan division storming in from the north to liberate Palestine remains in place. For these reasons, among others, Lebanon and the elimination of its resistance movement have always been existential priorities for both the United States and the Zionist regime. On 18th of February, the Zionist regime refused to withdraw from five key points: Al-Labuna near the Nagura outskirts, near Jalal Deir in Eight Harun, near Hammames Hill opposite Matula, visible from Kafar Killa but south of Khiam; Jabal Blat in Marwahin and Remye and the outskirts between Markaba and Hula. After the so-called ceasefire deadline and extension unilaterally demanded by the Zionist regime, these five points were not only declared sites of indefinite occupation, as Israeli War Minister Israel Katz arrogantly stated just days ago, but also became strategic locations for controlling the roads that connect them. The objective behind this prolonged occupation is unmistakable: laying the groundwork for a new so-called security belt to serve as a launch pad for further illegal expansion into Lebanon, a futile attempt to revert the equation to the days of the 1978 occupation of the country's south. Entire roads have been closed off, including a route from Odessa to Kafar Killa, the Markaba Hula roads linking the eastern and western sectors, and the roads leading to Jabal Blat and Nagura. The apartheid regime is not merely occupying five isolated points in southern Lebanon. It is working to seize an entire stretch of Lebanese territory, carving out a new buffer zone that serves as a launch pad for expanded invasion of Lebanon. While the United States has tempered Israeli demands for yet another extension of the so-called ceasefire, it has simultaneously provided the logistical, political, and material support for continued Zionist occupation and aggression. Continue with Press TV's coverage of this story. Exploiting Beirut's urgent need for economic reconstruction and recovery, the United States has tied financial relief to normalization of Lebanon's ties with Israel, using it as a precondition. This aligns with the vision articulated by U.S. Special Envoy Stephen Witkoff, who spoke of the potential for Syria and Lebanon to enter into normalization agreements with the Tel Aviv regime. It also reflects the long-standing strategy evident in World Bank and IMF policies, particularly in the aftermath of the 2019 economic crisis, of linking Lebanon's economic recovery to both normalization with the Israeli regime and the disarmament of Lebanon's resistance movement. Meanwhile, routine assassinations targeting civilian vehicles, often killing off-duty Hezbollah movement members going about their daily lives outside the context of battle, have become more frequent. Nearly every day since the U.S. delegation's last visit to Lebanon, deadly drone attacks on vehicles have terrorized local populations in Lebanon. This relentless and carefully choreographed campaign is yet another demonstration of Israel's unchecked impunity, exercised without restraint in Lebanon. The appointment of former Lebanese Army Commander Joseph Aoun to the presidency after years of serving the U.S. ambassador is just one of many steps Washington has taken to tighten its grip on Lebanon, aggressively working to isolate and dismantle the Hezbollah resistance group. Through economic and political coercion, the Lebanese army has been stripped of its role as the protector of the state and its people. An ongoing trend that reached new lows during and after the latest war in Lebanon. The army was instructed not to assist displaced civilians or repair border crossings destroyed by the Israeli regime, effectively reducing it to a weakened auxiliary force and forcing American hegemonic mandates in the region. Website Electronic Intifada has also covered this story and tells us more. Now, with a thoroughly compliant president and prime minister in place, Lebanese Prime Minister Nawaf Salam, who has openly dismissed the slogan People Army Resistance as a thing of the past and declared that investments will not come to Lebanon as long as there are weapons outside the authority of the state, Washington's influence over the Lebanese administration is clearer than ever before. In recent days, U.S. officials once again toured Lebanon, issuing directives and pressuring the new government for concessions. It is highly likely that the issue of the 5 occupied points, alongside the expanding attacks on Lebanese civilians and their hometowns, will be leveraged by the U.S. and Israel to push for long-sought objectives at the negotiating table, including disarming Hezbollah, the Lebanese resistance movement, and Lebanon's normalization of ties with Israel. Throughout the so-called ceasefire, the Israeli regime has actively sought to prevent villagers from returning to their homes, killing those who refuse to leave and bombing others in their homes. Meanwhile, the Israeli regime and the United States are not only waging a deadly counterinsurgency against Hezbollah to secure control over Lebanon's political landscape, but are also attacking any attempts by displaced residents to return and reclaim their villages. Just as Israel's genocidal campaign in Gaza aims to erase all signs of life in the besieged territory, its siege on southern Lebanon operates with the same intent. Recently, Israeli occupation forces stormed mobile homes where displaced southern Lebanese people had returned to their villages. Just recently, makeshift homes, cafes, and shops were bombed and set ablaze by 4 Israeli Apache attack helicopters, murdering 5 people and destroying multiple mobile homes. It is evident that beyond its stated goal of targeting the Lebanese resistance movement, the Israeli regime is systematically clearing land of its inhabitants and their livelihoods. Through the relentless destruction of infrastructure, mobile homes, and border town businesses, alongside the indiscriminate killing of civilians, the Israeli regime has sought to solidify its envisioned buffer zone. Nonetheless, southern Lebanese people remain steadfast in the village of Khiam, where the Zionist regime maintains a shaky military presence at the Hamamir Hills, south of the village. Residents continue to return to their homes despite widespread destruction. Despite the material losses suffered by the resistance movement and the immense suffering inflicted upon the region, the Israeli regime continues to sink deeper into its own internal crises and contradictions. Israel has failed to achieve its stated objectives of crushing the resistance groups, which still maintain the upper hand in their demands and negotiations in both Gaza and Lebanon.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the pit.
On Youth Station.
Youth Station. Youth Station.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. السلام عليكم dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of Youth Station. Well, this is Asma and...
This is Nahid, being so glad to be with you.
Yeah, well, we are too happy because we're getting close to the Eid, of course. The Eid al-Fitr, which is very important to us because we've been participating in this great gathering, the holy great gathering of the holy month of Ramadan. And then this Eid is actually considered as the rewarding day for each and every single one of us.
Yeah, and you know, for me personally, this Eid is like the Eid of memories. Like from my childhood till now, every time that we were even talking about this Eid, I remember lots of good memories, good happenings and good things that we used to do on this day.
Exactly. Same in here. Well, all the Eids from our childhood up until now hold too much of memories into themselves. Yeah. Because one of the very most important things that happen during these important days is that we go to meet each other. The process of feasting with the dear ones, like the family, friends, and all the people that are so dear to even the neighbors. Even the neighbors come to meet each other. So it's sort of a feast that is very memorable and also very friendly and lovely. And it's something very, very happy and joyful.
You know what makes these celebrations super special to me is that we are all standing next to each other from the early in the morning that we have the pray.
Yeah.
And it's like we are showing a sample of the Muslim community that is still, though we have hardship, we have problems with all the pros and cons of the society,
exactly,
we are still sitting next to each other. We are showing the picture. We are depicting the picture of the community.
Yeah, solidarity.
Yeah.
You know, there are many Eids, of course, in the Islamic calendar. One of them is Eid al-Adha, that is related to the time when people gather together for that celebration that happens in Kaaba and during that very holy month again, the month of Dhul-Hajjah.
And also we have Eid al-Qadir, the special day that is, actually it is one of the most important Eids for
Muslims. For specifically the Shia.
Yeah, exactly. And we have the big celebration on that day.
Yeah.
The day that Imam Ali alayhi salam was known and recognized as the person who was going to help the community after the Prophet.
To pursue the journey of the Prophet. So that is also a very important Eid. You know, the philosophy behind each and every one of these Eids is very important because, just as you mentioned, it's a sign of solidarity and being united all together. And also, it brings about happiness, peace, and friendship because as a result of the feast that I was just talking about. Well, this is Youth Station. Nahid and I are talking about Eid al-Fitr, which is very important in Islamic calendar. For a month, for 30 days, we kept praying and fasting and reciting the Holy Book of Quran. We kept doing all the things that we've been instructed to do according to God's instruction and, again, the Holy Book of Quran. And then comes the day of Eid. So this must be very special.
Yeah, and also there are too many perspectives to this day. Like, it is not a simple day of celebration in our calendar. There are many perspectives, like the matter of charity, in which we have Zakat al-Fitr.
Exactly.
We are even showing the picture of the protecting community. Mm-hmm. So there are many perspectives. The bonds among the people, the way we are showing our friendship, showing our love towards each other.
Yeah.
The way we are showing the charity, we are being protective, we know about the poor side of our community as well.
Exactly.
And also, there are many perspectives that show the way we are having the gratitude for the Creator.
Yeah.
We show our thankfulness for the glorious month that we had.
Yeah. You see, I was just mentioning the philosophy behind Eid. You see, you so rightly mentioned it, that we have this donation that is considered as a kind of charity, the right. act of charity, that happens before the morning prayers. Now, this has got a lot to say, like after a month that you've been acting exactly in the way of God, the way He has instructed you, then comes the day of Eid that you again have to remember the poor people, you have to remember the needy people. So before you actually go for that gathering of the praying that happens in the day of Eid, you have to devote a special amount of money for the poor people, and yeah. it's a must.
And again, it is shown that this Eid is not an individual task.
Exactly.
It's not an individual day.
Exactly.
It's a day that we need to show that it's a group work. Like
yeah.
we are seeing the other people as well, the poor people.
Exactly. You know, as you just mentioned, the fact that it reminds us of the other sects and parts and layers of the society is very important. Like, you have to take care of this very thing, that there are some other people that maybe they did not have the blessing that you had during this month. So you have to help them. If not by praying or anything else, then you can devote a special amount of money. That is actually considered the way the scholars would actually decide for it.
So true. And after that, when we have the pray, we are being thankful for all the benefits, all the good things that we achieved throughout this month and even by the end of it.
Exactly.
Like, we know that in this month, like the doors of heaven are open to mm-hmm. us. The angels are just looking upon us as if we are the best creatures ever. We are being the best examples of ourselves. And now, by the end of it, we have this opportunity to be thankful.
Yeah. Well, you know, this year was slightly much more magnificent and unique. Why? Because in the Islamic calendar, we have the Eid al-Fitr, and also we had the holy month of Ramadan that coincided with the new year of Nowruz
right.
for the Persian people, for the Iranian. So it has got a lot of connotation, maybe. Like, Eid is a sort of a spring for every Muslim person. It could be a beginning to a new journey that you decided during the holy month of Ramadan, so that it could be continuous. You can continue that until the other days and months of the year.
Yeah, it's so true. Many Iranians are so excited this year about this new year.
Yeah.
And the reason is that they know that based on our Islamic teachings, we know that by the Eid and by the end of Ramadan, especially after the Nights of Destiny, we can restart our journey of life.
Yeah.
And now here it is happening at the same time as New Year. So
exactly.
It's up to you. Like,
as if
you have your way opened. Right.
Yeah, two celebrations happening together. And it's just, it's a trigger, actually, to make us think more of the spring of our life. Like, it has coincided with the Eid al-Fitr, which is giving you this connotation that it's this holy Eid, and also it's the new year of your calendar. So you can seize the day and take the opportunity and then start it afresh.
Yeah, the opportunity. Like,
exactly.
You have your chance to continue your life based on the decisions that you make.
Yeah, well, there are some very prominent days for Eid in the Islamic calendar, as we just talked about. But then the question is, is it only about these specific days, or do we have any other chance for turning it all around in the other days of the year? Well, in order to answer this, we go for a break and then we come back.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
A day in which you commit no sins is going to be considered an Eid for you. Quoting Imam Ali alayhi salam, I can answer the question that you previously asked. Like, Imam Ali has made it clear for us, so whenever you are not committing sins, whenever you are not making the mistakes, whenever you are not falling in the traps of evil, on that day, you can claim that you are having the Eid for you.
Exactly. You know, whenever I recite this holy verse from the holy book of Quran,
that says, that goes like this. Well, this is the literal translation of it that I remember, that God tells the prophet, if any of my obedience would wish to talk to me, then tell them that I'm so close to them. Well, saying this, I just remember in the dark situations, in the darkest part of my life, I would just reciting this every now and then to remember that it's not about that I'd like to be in your calendar. It must be in your heart. Like the day that, according to what you said, the day in which you try to be a real obedient of God, a day in which you actually represent yourself in the best way possible, and the day in which you go according to the instructions of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, is actually your Eid. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a day in your calendar, a day that everybody else is knowing about it. It could happen in your heart as well, in every single day. If you need Eid, then remember that. If you go with no sin for a whole day, then that is your happy day.
Yeah, and that is why they say Muslims have the happy face the whole time, even though they might have problems.
Yeah.
They will always keep the happy face because they know that there mm-hmm. is always God looking upon them. There is always a God for them to talk to ask for help. And knowing this and believing in this will give us the happy face.
Well, you know, the whole idea behind Eid is the idea of renewal and this refreshing energy that will get into your heart. So I guess every day that you try to actually be the best person you could be it in your interactions with other people or in your social activities, like imagine you're working in a place and then from the very morning you decide to be the best of what you can. Try to share whatever in your hand to help someone who comes to you. I guess this day could be considered as your Eid as
well. Yeah, even having the intention. We have it mentioned by the creator that even if you are intending to do something good, I will count it as one of the good deeds of you on that mm-hmm. day.
Exactly.
So it's so nice to be a Muslim and even intend, like even think of doing good things. If you had the power to do it, that's great. And even if you couldn't and failed, the blessing will be given to you based on what you just were thinking about.
Exactly. Well, you know, this year is also different from this perspective that many people, Palestinian people specifically, are suffering from war. So these people, though they were fasting, though they had a difficult time, maybe many of them have lost their dear ones, so they had to continue doing, participating in this act right. of fasting in the holy month of Ramadan. So we have to remember these people as well. If there's a day in which there's no oppression upon people, if there's a way in which all the children are living a happy life, having their normal, ordinary life like everyone else in this world. I guess this is the right for every human being. That day would be considered as Eid. But as long as there are sufferings and as long as there are people who are not having, not a perfect life, I'm just talking about an ordinary life, I guess Eid is not complete.
Yeah, and that is the missed piece of the puzzle, which is usually considered as the coming of the savior of life.
Exactly. Like, it actually reminds us also to pray for the reappearance of Imam Mahdi ajal right. Allah farajah, and this is very important. Also, just as the ending point, if I want to outline everything, I would put it this way, that as a youngster, if you are living with your parents, then I guess taking care of them, being respectful toward them, showing gratitude towards them, and not just them, to the people around you, everyone who has helped you with a single word, a smile, anything, you being respectful towards them is showing that you are having Eid, because that is a change
yeah,
in your behavior.
Yeah, the happy day.
Yeah. When you have this intention of change in your mind and you're hopeful to represent the best version of yourself, that day is going to be the Eid for you.
Yeah, so true. And beside that, we have the special days as the Eids in which we can celebrate the yeah. end of the glorious time that we had, like this holy month.
Have a perfect feast and gathering with your family and friends. And also, may God reward you with the best way possible. So stay healthy and happy Eid to everyone.
So until another episode, wassalamu alaikum
wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you dear youth will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings. Be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about
this. We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum wa
rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Rabbil alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio presents The Month of Allah. Let's be with Hujjatul Islam Sayyid Abbas Razavian.
As I look to nature's beauty, dazzled am I, knowing everything calls on you, the Lord Most High.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome to the program Month of Allah. As the month of Ramadan is winding down, this is a very sad time for the believers. Because if we were to understand how great the month of Ramadan truly was, we wish it would last the entire month. Because we are the guests of Allah, because this is His month. Therefore, when the month of Ramadan comes to an end, some people are worrying about what are they going to do afterwards? What's going to happen to their spirituality afterwards? To address this question, there is positive news that now that we have purified ourselves, we have done repentance, we have sought the forgiveness of God, we have done many different acts of worship, we are now in a better position to continue our spiritual journey after the month of Ramadan. That we should not make the month of Shawwal a month that we are now relaxed. A month that if I followed and obeyed the commands of God during the month of Ramadan, that now I can be much more relaxed in the month of Shawwal. That should not be true. Because when a person acts and performs amal as-salih, good actions, genuine actions, that itself is a nur, that itself is a light. And that's going to guide them spiritually towards a higher level. Therefore, now that we have all these great actions, because the night of Qadr, the actions are worth more than 80 years of worship. Now that we have put these actions behind us, and now that we have performed these actions, we have light, we have nur, and that we have a better chance to increase our spirituality after the month of Ramadan. When we look at one of the traditions from Imam Baqir alayhi salam, the fifth Imam, he has narrated to us, said, "Udu anfusakum al khair." Get yourself accustomed to khair. In the holy month of Ramadan, how much have we gotten accustomed to reciting the Holy Quran? It's much easier for us now. So when you're accustomed to something, it's much easier for you to go on the same track and continue reading the Holy Quran and make it part of your daily routine. When we think about our prayers that we did, when we think about that connection that we had, when we think about fasting, even recommended fasting, it's much easier for us to continue the same track that we had, because this is how spirituality works. When you get accustomed to something, it's much easier for you for it to occur, and you don't even think about it anymore. Those that have performed mustahabat and recommended deeds, and they have gotten themselves used to it, becomes for them very natural, and they don't even think about doing those mustahab things. For example, having wudu when you go outside, having wudu and having ablution, and you're always cleansed and pure. It becomes something second nature for us. So this is the good glad tidings that we have, that after the month of Ramadan ends, we have a new light, we have more nur, and we are more accustomed to doing good. We're accustomed to going to the masjid. Let's not break this habit. Some of these habits that we have now are good habits. And the other narration, it says, "Man ya'mal yazdad quwwatan," from Imam Ali alayhi salam. When a person acts, he becomes stronger. We are now much more stronger. The way that we can fight against our nafs, we can fight against our lower desires, we are much more stronger. We had taken away water and drink and food from ourselves. Therefore, we are the most powerful people when it comes to fighting our nafs and our lower desires. We are stronger. And if a person, man yughassir fil amal yazdad fatra, if a person has shortcomings in his actions, he becomes weaker. So after the month of Ramadan, this is when a believer should shine the most. This is when a believer continues. Because the stages of spirituality happen slowly, and slowly you increase your connection to God and you reach a higher level. Let's not go back down and think that the month of Ramadan has ended, therefore I'm going to be and go back to the same person I used to be. You are now a new person. Let's continue and strive and progress in the path of spirituality after the month of Ramadan.
قال الإمام الحسن عليه السلام: التفكر حياة قلب البصير.
Imam Hassan alayhi salam said, "Thinking is the life of the heart of the cognizant."
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah, ma lana rabbun siwa.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with a number of distinguished reciters of the Holy Quran in a gathering titled Communion with the Holy Quran. This meeting took place in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniya on the first day of the blessed month of Ramadan, March 2nd, 2025. There are thousands of titles, topics, and headings in the Quran that can become a part of the common intellectual knowledge of the general populace. What makes this possible? Good recitation. That's when the people's Quranic knowledge will increase and they will think in the way that the Quran has taught. A person's movements and the way they walk are often a reflection of their thoughts. So, reading and reciting the Quran, the work that you are doing, is this important? It can work miracles and produce remarkable results. However, this is contingent upon observing the etiquettes for recitation. This is what makes your duty more significant. you need to follow the proper etiquettes for recitation. The first etiquette is that when you recite the Quran, whether you are by yourself at home or among a group here or anywhere else, you need to keep in mind that you are in the presence of God and are reading His words.
Subhanallah, hamdan lillah, wa la ilaha illallah. Subhanallah, hamdan lillah, wa la ilaha illallah. Allahu Akbar.
Be mindful of the fact that you are in the presence of the Lord and you are conveying His message and delivering His words to us. This will create a certain feeling in you. This is very important. That is the first etiquette. Read the Quran while paying attention to its meaning. Today, I noticed that some of our brothers did this effectively and the recitations were read while paying attention to the meaning of the words. Sometimes no attention is paid to the meaning, so the recitation has no impact. When you pay attention to the meaning and understand what truth is emerging from your throat, this is what it means to pay attention to the meaning. It has an impact. A person may be a native Arabic speaker and Arabic is their mother tongue, but they do not pay attention to the words they are uttering. In other words, it is essential that we understand what we are reciting. This is what it means to pay attention to the meaning. And recite the Quran using tarteel. Of course, in the terminology that is common among us today, tarteel refers to the way that recitations are read in these Quranic gatherings.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Of Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rashad Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Amid the devastation and despair, the people of Gaza have faced relentless bombardment, starvation, and displacement. Yet through this enduring crisis, one thing has remained unshaken in their collective spirit, their unwavering commitment to their lawful right of resistance.
After nearly 18 months of genocide, the people of Gaza have taken to the streets in an uprising against occupation, mass killings, and starvation, especially in Beit Lahia. The Israeli regime attempts to manipulate and sow division against the resistance is doomed to fail. Our resistance is inseparable from our existence, an undeniable right we will never relinquish.
Despite its advanced weaponry and relentless attempts to crush Gaza's spirit, the Israeli occupation has failed to break the will of the Palestinian people. Its brutal campaigns targeting civilian areas have only laid bare the true barbarity of the regime.
As Palestinians, our heart and soul are with the resistance. Our people remain aware of Israeli conspiracies. What the occupation failed to achieve through military force, it will not accomplish through deceptive plots.
While Israel's genocide continues, a more subtle and insidious attempt is being made, exploiting people's marches against the genocide in Beit Lahia, who erupted calling for the end of the Israeli war.
As the Israeli brutality intensifies, it is clear that the Gaza Strip will continue to be the battleground, not only for physical survival, but for the ideological and cultural soul of the Palestinian people. Ad Ibrahim, Gaza City.
The Israeli regime launched new airstrikes on several towns and cities across Lebanon on Friday in violation of a ceasefire with the Arab country. After two drone attacks, Israeli rockets targeted the Beirut southern suburbs, destroying two buildings.
As Lebanon marked Al-Quds Day, the Israeli occupation forces continued to pound the country, and for the first time since the ceasefire, Israel struck a residential neighborhood in South Beirut in an act which could jeopardize the already fragile truce.
The sounds of explosions were heard. Ambulances and firefighter trucks ran to the site, yet the rallies to commemorate Al-Quds Day did not stop. Hezbollah officials stress that despite the Israeli threats and continuous aggression, the resistance in Lebanon will not forsake Al-Quds.
On this blessed day, and in light of the current circumstances, we say that we renew our pledge to Al-Quds. We will not forsake Al-Quds. Together with all the honorable people in the nation, in Palestine and the Arab and Muslim world, and with the free people of the world, we will hold the banner of Al-Quds.
Palestinian activists also stress that Imam Khomeini knew that defeating the arrogant tyrants and achieving victory is only possible if the Muslims and Arabs were united and mobilized for the sake of Al-Quds.
Our enemies have failed in their attempts to break the resistance despite the continued atrocities. Their barbaric genocide against the people of Palestine and the aggression on Lebanon and Yemen since the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran. They have tried to weaken Iran since it is the only firm supporter of the resistance in the region, but they have failed.
It is Al-Quds that unites the Arabs and Muslims, and on this day we see the culmination of the efforts to face the common enemy. It is the shout of the oppressed in the region, but it is also the shout of the human conscience to confront the occupiers and liberate the Holy Land.
People of various faiths took part in Al-Quds Day celebrations in solidarity with Palestine and highlighted resistance as the only path to victory against the occupying regime. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
Israeli authorities have released Palestinian filmmaker Hamdan Bilal, a co-director of the Oscar-winning documentary No Other Land, after detaining him overnight. Bilal was in Sousia, a village in the occupied West Bank, when a group of Israeli settlers violently attacked him. Despite his injuries, Israeli soldiers arrested him instead of his assailants.
Settlers and army, they attacking my home and they beating me. They continue to beating me. It's like around between 15, 20 minutes until I was bleeding from all my head and face. And finally, after this attack, they took me to the place. I don't know where is it. I stay there. It's like all the night. They was laughing about me.
Bilal was taken into custody and was held overnight before being released.
On Monday, there was a massive attack on Sousia village where my friend and colleague and co-director of No Other Land documentary, Hamdan Bilal, lives. There was an attack in his home and other houses in the village. Settlers and soldiers targeted him precisely to revenge against the success of the movie and against Hamdan as activists in the village that documenting the attacks of the settlers that happening on his village all the time and other villages in Masafer Yatta. This is not an isolated attack. Attacks happening all the time, but this time it was revenge and attack on Hamdan for his success to try to punish him and to silence him and to prevent him from doing his work.
Bilal's documentary No Other Land, co-directed with Palestinian and Israeli filmmakers, sheds light on the forced displacement of Palestinians.
This incident raises further concerns about the growing attacks on Palestinian journalists and activists. As Israeli violence escalates, documenting the reality on the ground is being silenced. Naqa Hamid,